numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number nine in the house as well. Still to come this hour, JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel on the NBA. Some great games yesterday in the association. And Pete Futak on college football. By the way, Sean McCollum, who does the audio in the corner, Kelly, he really should have his own show. We've got to get him his own show.
What do you mean? He's had multiple of his own shows across this valley before.
Oh, has
just
he?
Not on this network, yeah.
God, I would love to hear those shows. Love it. Just would love to. Ladies and gentlemen, this gentleman has been kind enough to be on the show with us the past 2 weeks. This is his third appearance today. He was the owner of six entries in the Circus Survivor contest, which started with 6,133 entries. And a couple weeks ago when he came on for the first time, it had gotten all the way down through 7 weeks to 125. He still maintained all six of his entries that were listed under the name Crush'em Sports. And he's kind enough to join us now that he is no longer in the contest. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Bob DeLuca. How you doing, Bob?
Doing well, Gil. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Bob, you're a stand-up guy for coming on. Let me just start here. Now, for those who don't know, for those who are just landing on this for the first time, for the first 7 weeks of the season, Bob used all six entries on one team. He came on a numbers game 2 weeks ago. What I suggested was like, hey, it's one thing to have six entries when there's 6,133. It's an entirely different thing to be the only guy to have six. Nobody else had more than three left when there's only 125. And you talked about, well, I don't know, maybe I'll go one, maybe I didn't. You ended up going three on the Dolphins, three on the Cowboys in week number eight. And then last week you reverted back to one entry, one team per all of your entries. So all six you put on the Buffalo Bills, and they famously lose to the New York Jets. So, Bob, the first question, do you have regrets about it?
No. No regrets. I'm going to play the same style all the time.
When did you know that you were, let's talk about you during the game. When did you know that you were cooked? The Bills were up 14 to 10. There was a strip sack from Von Miller. Epinesa recovered it. They sort of dodged that bullet. Then the Jets did go ahead 17 to 14. 17 to 17, the Bills, you know, the Jets had a first and goal. The Bills had all three timeouts, though, and you held them to a field goal. Did you still think at that point, down 20 to 17, that Josh Allen was going to take you back to victory?
I pretty much early, I could see the way the Bills were playing and the way the Jets were playing. The Jets had a really good game plan coming in, and it seemed like the Bills did not. And they kept their big stars. They kept Buffalo's big guys pretty much contained. Von Miller was always spun out where he was wide, going up the field to get, he never turned in to get the quarterback. They just spun him out and kept him straight. Two easy interceptions thrown by Josh Allen. He just like floated the ball out there, no zip, no nothing. And when Stephon Diggs caught that out to the sidelines when we were under with a minute and change left, I thought we had a shot, but immediately the flag comes. So,
yeah.
You know what? I didn't feel good about the game at all.
Yeah. That's usually how it goes when Survivor teams get knocked out. You can kind of see it developing, and you sort of know that the worst is coming. Did you hedge? The Jets were double-digit dogs in this game. Did you make a bet to hedge?
No.
Did you ever... Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Because the intrinsic value of each of your remaining six entries was $49,000 plus, so that's nearly $300,000 total. Did you not think at all to hedge? Did it occur to you to hedge?
No, I was so caught up in all the options that I had and what I was trying to do and trying to stay alive. At no point in the season did I really want to use Buffalo. The guys that caught them early caught them right. You know, there was teams that you caught right. Like I caught Tampa right, and right after I caught them, they went on a three-game losing streak. And that's the way it is. So I was caught up in everything. In the end, I didn't talk to myself long enough, and I made the wrong decision.
You do say you made the wrong decision on not to hedge.
Yes.
Okay. So let's go back to the strategy. Now that you're out, And when you were on, you were pretty, you know, you were good about hinting what you were going to do, because I asked you, hey, you know, I assume you're saving Buffalo for Thanksgiving. You said, no, not even a consideration. Was your plan, Bob, to play it one team with all six entries until Thanksgiving? And then the other thing you hinted at, to split then the Minnesota-New England game on Thanksgiving 3-3, was that the strategy?
That was the strategy. I was trying to get to, once I got to Thanksgiving, if I could still have six, I would feel pretty good about it. And of course, we all know it's one and done. And I was, after 8 weeks, I became one and done when I used my strategy.
What do you say to the people, either, you know, both those that are not in Survivor and those that are in Survivor? What do you say to the people who are slamming your thought process and your strategy here?
Oh, I say thank you. You know, listen, everybody's a Monday morning quarterback. They all know how to do it better than the other guy. And, you know, listen, I have a style. I'm going to stick to it. Next year I might be out in the first week, but I'm still going to be all in. And hopefully I go longer than week 9 and I get the job finished. I made a crucial mistake this week and it cost me. But you know what? I'm still the same guy now. The day I got into the day the contest started as the day after I lost this thing. So let's throw a couple of fist pumps for Kelly and we're going next year.
Let's go, Tommy. We're coming back. Bob, thank you so much for coming on with us, man. This has been, I love the way you're handling this afterward. I think what you're saying right now is the way, I mean, we just did a pro tip on it, right? I mean, you have a plan and process in place. You stuck to it. The results didn't work out, but you know you had the plan that you wanted to follow in place, and you did it to the end.
Yeah, I want to say this, Bob, and you can sort of roll with this or not, but one of the things that I said is, you came on here 2 weeks ago, and I openly said, I go, hey, Bob, you know, it's only under 25 now. You got six. You should probably think about splitting. I don't know to the extent that got you to split. I was sort of saying on air, I was like, when Miami was losing to Detroit, I was like that Homer Simpson thing going back into the bush, because I felt terrible about it, right? But you did split that week. And then, you know, even last week, when you hinted that you were going to use one, you didn't hint, you said you were going to use one. On the way out, I said, boy, the other people that are still alive in this contest are going to be thrilled to hear that. But the difference is that I can make both of those comments, which are cautionary ones for your strategy, but also hold the thought in my head at the same time that your strategy doesn't mean that your strategy sucked in the end, that you were just as likely, if you were right about the calculus of your decision-making, right? If you were right that the Buffalo-Detroit game on Thanksgiving is going to be a landmine, you would have checkmated everybody. So I do respect you in that way, because I don't buy into the people who are just slamming you. This is not a binary thing where it's like, oh, 4th-and-1, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do. There are different ways to get to the promised land, and you had that, you had the process. Is that sort of where your head is at, where it's like, look, it didn't work out, but I was just as likely to have gotten there this way?
Yes, you hit it right on the spot, and that's the way I looked at it. And, you know, listen, there's... If I use two teams, if I split 3-3, I have a gentleman or a gal who has 3 left. And you could see where he's probably going. You have 5 guys with 2 left. You could see where they're probably going. If I split it and I go 3-3 and I lose one of those 3s, the gentleman who has the other 3, I lose my advantage. Now it's 3-3. The advantage is gone. If I stay with the 6 and I'm correct, which I've been all through for 8 weeks, and I still hold the advantage. You need the advantage. Once you give the advantage up, now the game changes. So, listen, I went all in. I did have a few scenarios where I was going to go 3-3, use the 3 with Miami that I saved, go with New England, 3-3, save the other 3 with New England for Thanksgiving to have against Minnesota. And all of them were out, and I just didn't walk around and put some more holes in the rug and talk to myself long enough and work this thing through. And I jumped too fast. This is all on me. I just learned something for next season. And hopefully I make it past week 1. But I'll be all in, and I'll be saying hello to you guys when I stop in Vegas. I'm going to come on over and wave through the glass to you.
All right. So just to clarify, so you regret the not hedging. You don't regret how you played it, the contest itself.
Correct.
Okay. By the way, when the Josh Allen news came down yesterday about his UCL and they're having to evaluate his ulnar collateral ligament today, the very first thing I texted, and we don't know if Josh Allen's going to miss any time or not at the current time, but the very first thing I texted to Kelly, and Kelly can vouch for this, is Bob DeLuca's karmic revenge on everybody still in the contest that's killing him. Because we don't know. Like, that's in play. We don't know if Josh Allen is even going to play on Thanksgiving at this point. Maybe he will. Maybe this will be moot by, you know, an hour from now. But I thought that was an interesting little tidbit to happen yesterday, too, where it's like, maybe the vagaries of this contest are such that nothing should be so black and white, right? Like, maybe your arrogance about Bob being wrong about everything, maybe you should ratchet that back. That was sort of my reaction to that. But I'll say what Kelly said. Good on you for coming up here. You're a stand-up guy. You're taking a lot of incoming. You have some regrets. You don't have others. You're happy with your process. Good on you, Bob, and it's been a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure here on my side, too, and I'll see you in Vegas.
Bob DeLuca, everybody, at Crush'em Sports on Twitter. How about that?
That seat is open for him in the studio whenever he comes out.
Everyone.
First cocktail on me.
First cocktail on Kelly. That's by the way, can I just say this? He loves you. Like, he loves Kelly Bick.
I love Bob for so many reasons. When we come back from break, I'm going to tell you why.
Oh, there's more. Okay. All right. We'll talk some college football as well on the other side with Pete Futak, Jonathan Von Tobel on the NBA, and Kelly Bidlin guesses some college football lines. Don't sleep on that. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
College basketball has started, and now is the time to get your copy of our annual betting guide at over 400 pages. That's 400 of them. It's our biggest betting guide ever with odds, trends, power ratings, and analysis on every team. Our team of experts, including Greg Hoops Peterson, Matt Humans, Wes Reynolds, they provide their predictions for win totals, futures, conference champions, tournament teams, and the breakdown of all 60 coaching changes since last season. The only way to get the guide is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now for just $99 and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do all the way through the Super Bowl. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Scott, New York Mets 16. Great pro tip. He says, I took Bailey Zappi at 250-1 for Offensive Rookie of the Year, thinking Mac was not 100% to start the season and could be knocked out of a game or two. Zappi gave me hope with two quick touchdowns on Monday night versus the Bears, but quickly ended the dream with a miserable second half. I tried.
So I don't have a problem with that one either, right? Because you can sit here today making the argument that Zappi should still be the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots.
And he said, I tried. Yes. Again, no one on Twitter has ever lost the bet. But in real life, right, you have to be able to, there are some bets you have to be willing to lose. And you're going to lose some. This is just how it works. Rick Ollier says, at least Bob, talking about Bob DeLuca now, he says, at least Bob finished in the upper quartile of the top quartile. Who said that recently about something? That's a reference to something.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. someone will help me out. Here's one from Angriest Guy in New Jersey. What a great sport, man. Tell you this straight up, nobody would be able to find me in his situation. You got to love this guy, man. I wouldn't come on your show if it was Jay Leno.
I mean, 2 days after it happens? Yeah. Yes. For him to come on and talk about this today, I would be in the fetal position in a dark room right now for 2 days.
Here's the one. Did the absence of Milano cause you pause in your play? I should have asked that. Or did you believe the Bills are just the better team? Much respect for your attitude and strategy. This is from Jesse Welch. Man, so much respect to Bob DeLuca for his handling of this. If I were in his spot, I'd be calling in from an insane asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Geiger, in-house attorney of A Numbers Game. Bob is a stand-up guy. I hope he gets his quote-unquote karmic revenge, and also, as he does, wish he had thought about hedging. Just to cover his costs with a little profit, have him on again. I thought that was very honest to Bob.
Yeah.
Where, you know, yeah, okay, did he regret the way he played? No, he was steadfast in that. But yes, he did admit the hedging part he should have done. And it's just his head wasn't about him, and he didn't do it. Johnny Ringo. That interview had to be as hard as interviewing someone that lost six kids in a car accident. What a professional. It wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah. You wanted to say something about Bob.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I just think for the style that it sounds like Bob approached this contest with, and I'm sure he approaches, you know, everyday betting with, is something that I've really had to evolve with, I would say, the past 5-6 years of my betting life. I mean, Gil, you and I have talked about this before. Probably 15 years ago when I was in college, I started college betting. I was betting way over my skis, was playing a ton of poker, was betting on sports at way more dollars than I should have been. I learned the hard way, right? You go broke, you learn the hard way. And when I started betting again, became very disciplined as far as unit size and making sure my bankroll was under control and how much I was making for each bet. And it became very disciplined. And was that a good way of me building myself back up? Yes. But when you get to a certain point where I think it's more for intermediate bettors and beyond, there becomes a point where you know when you have an edge or when you see an edge and you can't be afraid to fire everything you got.
Yes.
And it's some of these bets that you make, you got to be okay with it's an unload the clip kind of bet. And you bet way over what your normal unit size is. And that is, for me, that's the way that I'm able to find an edge and attack it and make money with what we're doing. And I think a lot of what he went through his contest is talking about that. Him talking about having the advantage of the 6 entries every single week versus the guy who only has 3. It's finding that edge and exploiting it and attacking it the right way.
It's also no one better knows the circumstances of another, just in general, right? Like, oh my God, you know, we talk about people who like don't put their entries in, right? So there's that element. We don't know the circumstances of another better. But in this case, I want to say it. The people who believe that Bob is absolutely wrong in what he did, the people who think they know the most are often the people who are the dumbest. They don't have the ability, they don't have the brain to hold 2 thoughts in their heads at the same time, and there shouldn't be as much judgment on it. And again, this coming from a guy who told Bob, who suggested Bob, you should probably split, man.
Yeah.
Everybody else, right? Both things are true. I want to say one last thing before we get to college football guessing lines. Let me just raise my hand. Before the season started, people were talking about survivor strategy, and I was saying, you're playing to win, you're not playing to survive. The game is misnamed, right? So I verbally am saying, this is how you should play it. What did I do? When this was such a volatile season, I didn't play it the way I said. I changed my strategy and started splitting up my picks. And look, I ended up 2 weeks short of Bob. So I'm not so sure his way wasn't the smart way in an ever more volatile NFL season. Maybe you should only go on one team because you're less likely to hit landmines. So there's that. Mm-hmm. And like, imagine what it takes. Well, theory, if you're not Bob, imagine what it takes to press that button every week with all 6 teams, with one team on all 6 entries. Like, we can talk about it, but until you're the dude doing it this late in,
yes,
that's a moment we cannot capture here on a radio show.
You can't. I mean, that's a special. It's a special type of person. It's a gambler, right? I mean, it's willing to lay it all on the line.
He was playing to win.
All the chips in the middle.
He was playing to win. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for everybody's favorite segment, College Football Guessing Lines with Kelly Bidlin.
Oh, yeah! Let's go! Didn't do so well last week, Gil. Hopefully nobody was playing Clemson with me. I think UTSA got home, but it went to overtime.
My favorite part of that is, didn't come up on camera, is when you go, didn't do so well last week, Gil, pointing at me. Didn't do so well last week. All right, for those of you, if you're just landing on this segment and you're thinking, wait a minute, you did the whole Pro Football guessing lines on Monday. Kelly's doing college. Here's the thing with Kelly. Kelly knows basketball really well. He knows golf really well. College football, not so much. He doesn't even know, like, if a team's a 14-point dog or favorite kind of thing. Right. But that's why we do college football guessing lines with Kelly, just to see how random this can be. Kelly, you ready?
Let's go.
Indiana at Ohio State.
Ohio State. Minus 31, okay? Ohio State cruising through the Big Ten, but only put up 21 points against Northwestern last week. I don't know. Is there a little concern there, Gil? I don't know. I didn't watch the game, but maybe. After starting 3-0, the Fighting West Reynolds have lost 6 straight, including 5 against Big Ten opponents. Ohio State laying 31 in this game. Show me what we got.
39.5. Show me what you got. That was like very mystical of you. Show me what you're working with.
Show me what you're working with.
39.5. Not close, but close because it's kind of high anyway. So you get some points for that.
I'd have to bet the Fighting West Reynolds.
Bet the fight. Bet Indiana. Value on Indiana, says Kelly Bidlin. Here you go. How about Liberty at UConn? How about UConn?
I just imagine Wyatt cackling while he's putting these together, some of these games. Like, Liberty at UConn.
You know what he texted me yesterday? By the way, Wyatt and I used to do these, and now I'm just like, go ahead, Wyatt, do whatever. And he texted me this. He goes, I had a little spice this week. What's his word?
This is the spice, I guess. All right, I put Liberty minus 13, okay? Only one loss this year to Wake Forest by one? Things I learned while doing this, right? It's incredible. Wins over BYU and Arkansas the past 2 weeks. UConn. 5-5 straight up. How about 8-2 ATS and outperforming the spread by 7.2 points for UConn? I'm going Liberty laying 13 in this game at UConn.
No respect for the Fighting Goulets of UConn. What do you got? Liberty minus 14.5.
Well, that was pretty dang close.
Pretty good. Pretty all good right, right there. All right. Number three, Iowa State at Oklahoma State.
Okay, Oklahoma State laying 7 here at home. Now, this one tripped me up a bit because I learned that they've been out without their starting quarterback, Spencer Sanders, for the past couple of games, who sounds like a pretty big deal to this offense. He does a lot. I did a lot of research for this stuff, Gil. A lot of research. Iowa State 31-14 win over West Virginia last week. Had lost 5 straight. For Oklahoma State, though, big theme here. We're not in Kansas anymore. Lost to Kansas State and Kansas the past 2 weeks. Might have played themselves out of Big 12 contention. I'm going Oklahoma State laying 7 here, though, at Iowa State. Looks like Spencer Sanders is a game-time decision.
Yeah, this one's not so good for you. Iowa State minus 1.5.
Oh, boy. Spencer Sanders plays. It sounds like a bet.
Oh, boy. Yep. All right, real quick. We got two more. UCF at Tulane. Oh, this one's good for you.
Tulane laying 6. All right, UCF with tight wins over Memphis and Cincinnati the past 2 weeks. Quarterback issue, sophomore Mikey Keene starting past 2 games. Tulane cruising. 1 last 5, 8-1 ATS, plus 6.5 ATS plus minus with a 16-point margin of victory. Tulane laying 6 at home against the Golden Knights of UCF. Show me what
they're laying 2.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
All right.
I like you stopped and okay, maybe not. And finally,
San Jose State.
This is the Spartans of San Jose State at San Diego State.
Hate you, Wyatt. The classic Mountain West game of the week. San Jose State, I'm laying 13. I don't know. San Jose State 6-2. They're first in this Mountain West conference. Terrible conference. Wins past 2 weeks against Colorado State and Nevada, but those teams are terrible effort. San Jose State minus 13.
Nah, minus 2.5.
A lot of value, Gil.
A lot of value on the Spartans. San Diego State going to the Pac-12? Wow.
This was a rough week for me.
This is a rough week, but a lot of value extracted from the exercise. That's the real point. We'll come back. College football, second of 6 rankings next. We'll bend Pete Futax here about that. What's the chaos scenario next?
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game, proudly brought to you by BetMGM, live from the South Point Hotel Casino, tip of the strip. Here in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Shout out to Matt Eumanns, who has his mid-season betting awards on the website at vsin.com. Check that out. Great articles every day on the website. Betting tools, picks at a glance. Listen live or show replays. By the way, Adam Kramer, our guy, he's got his new college football rankings, or he looks ahead to the new college football rankings, I should say, tonight. His rankings, well, I think he's got TCU 5th. Adam Kramer. All that on the website, vsin.com. Check it out. We get tweets.
Humans, by the way, some fun midseason awards. Oh. Not exactly what we did.
Oh, fun?
A little different. A little more fun ones.
Oh, I like that.
You should check that out.
Sean Gusick, he says, it was the Colts owner who said the quartile thing. Yes, that's right. Jim Irsay, J&J Watering Hole reminding us the same. He said the Irsay upper quartile clown show. The exact quote, by the way, Kelly, from Jim Irsay. Quote, that means in the upper quartile of winners, we're in the top quartile of that upper quartile.
Okay, I didn't catch that exact line, and I didn't listen to that whole thing yesterday from Irsay, but man, it sounds like he had some rants about how great of a franchise they were and wouldn't shut up about that.
Well, here was this thing about Jeff Saturday. He goes, we were fortunate that he was available. Really? Really? He says, I'm glad he doesn't have NFL experience. He's glad Saturday hasn't learned the fear NFL coaches have, and then they take a shot at analytics.
I mean, yeah, it just goes I heard that line. I did hear that one yesterday.
It's another analytics quote for us in our little intro. This is from 702 Steve. Steve in Vegas, said, nobody's ever going to come back on your show during Circus Survivor again. Don't even bother trying to book them. When I first heard him a few weeks ago, I knew he was playing with fire. You and Kelly owe him $6,000 worth of fun in Vegas and letting him jinx himself. Well, Steve in Vegas, I beg to differ. He was on 2 weeks ago. He won when he split with us. So we're off the hook, buddy. Sorry.
Yeah, I think Bob's okay with what he did. Otherwise, he wouldn't have come on with us today.
Trust me, Bob will come on whenever he wants to come on. Al Yonis gives you props, Kelly. Says, what a great little monologue about attacking an edge by Kelly Bidlin. Said with so much conviction and realness. Love learning new stuff on this show every day.
Yeah, appreciate that, Al.
There you go. Sean Gusick adds, he goes, I play Survivor like Bob. In my head, I hate to lose entries, so I feel picking one winner is easier than trying to pick multiple teams to save each entry. Your mind plays games, and you're trying to move all six, so why not pick one?
And that was his point, right? I mean, that was his point. He felt as long as he had those six, he had such an edge over the rest of the competition. And it was, look, he played it. Maybe he played it a little too long, but that's the way he was going to play it all year.
And Ryan Hyatt with his weekly, do I even bother to do any show prep on college football until I hear Kelly guessing college football lines? Hell no.
A rough week this week.
Oh, man. Okay, let's go to college football. Let's go to Pete Futak, everybody, from collegefootballnews.com. The czar of college football news, where it's a treasure trove of college football information. How you doing, Peter?
I'm fine. I'm kind of with you. I'm the person who thinks that football, unlike baseball, is a completely different animal, has gone way too far in the analytics thing. And even I heard that thing from Ursay and was like, I don't know if I want my owner saying that about analytics. You have to have some thought about that part of the game at this point. But hey, who knows? It might work. This whole Saturday thing might work at the end of the day.
Well, he's considered to be the loopiest of owners, right? The reason that there's a theory out there that the reason he was the one that went after Dan Snyder is because all of his stuff is out there and he has no skeletons in the closet.
Sure,
so
absolutely.
He was able to go after Dan Snyder. So yeah,
no more F's to give. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Let's. It's the second of the six college football rankings tonight.
Yeah.
Only the sixth one matters. There's obviously going to be some change because both Clemson and Alabama lost. And, oh, what a loss that was for Bama. Good on Brian Kelly for going for two there and get it done. But I'm just curious. I'm less curious about where you think this is going to where the order is going to be tonight. Because I think a lot of this, as we talked about last week, is going to take care of itself. I guess what I want to get to is, what's the chaos scenario? Because people are betting on who's going to make the playoffs, who's going to make the playoff, who's not. What's the scenario at the end of the year that you think is going to cause the most absolute mayhem?
LSU winning out, because we've never had a two-loss team in the college football playoff. Now, I would argue you could go line by line with, you know, tough losses, like, for example, LSU losing to open the season at Florida State, Utah opening the season losing at Florida, LSU coming up with the big win over Alabama, Utah handing USC its only loss. I mean, there's some parallels here, but because it's the SEC, everyone's in deep love with LSU and kind of put aside Utah, even though they're exactly the same if you did the side-by-side taste test. But if LSU wins out, that would mean they have to go on and beat Georgia in the SEC championship. It would be the first time ever that we probably have a two-loss team in the college football playoff. You still probably take Georgia. You still make the argument that if Tennessee's only loss is at Georgia, which is as acceptable as it gets, now we get our chaos theory.
Well, I mean, that would just be insane, because then what do you do in addition if you have a one-loss ACC or a one-loss Pac-12? What if TCU goes undefeated? Like, I mean, this could be the worst.
We start with this. If you go undefeated, all the TCU hate and all the things that
TCU is going to take care of itself, right?
Exactly. If you go under, no way, no how, no chance an undefeated a Power Five conference champion is not in the college football playoff. At the moment, there's only four, and Michigan and Ohio State have to play each other. So there's only going to be at most three left: Georgia, maybe TCU, and the Big Ten championship winner, maybe. So there's no way any of those three are left out, and then you go from there.
You know what? I'm rooting for chaos. Just absolutely rooting for it.
We're going to get this is all sort of dumb, because we're going to get the expansion at some point in the next 2 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And like, I still say, like, I know I'm crazy, and this is not me being, you know, Power Five snobby here.
No.
I'm still saying, like, y'all still sure Alabama isn't, you know, I mean,
oh,
look
stop.
At Alabama.
Stop
they're
it.
Not. They're not getting in. Okay. They're not getting in. Of course not. But seriously, they lose on the last second kick at Tennessee. They lose at the last second 2-point conversion. So if that knuckleball by Tennessee goes whoop.
Hey, Pete, you know how I know someone's a Power Five snobby when they start the sentence with, "Hey, look, I'm not being college. I'm not being Power Five snobby, but."
Oh, but I am a. I'm the absolute. I'm the Grand Marshal of the Power Five snobby.
You are the Grand Marshal. Yes, you're on the float.
I'm also not a believer that Bama belongs in any of this.
Okay.
But again, in an expanded college football playoff, you still don't want to see that team coming rolling in there.
Speaking of TCU. They're 7-point dogs against Texas. I get it. They're dogs. Should be. 7?
There is a lot of love. See, going back to Alabama, and this I'm dead serious on, the committee and everyone else, remember, not everybody watches every college football game. So for including the college football playoff committee, which in my personal conspiracy theory world, I'm telling you, they don't have the Pac-12 network, and they have not seen any of these Pac-12 teams play because they screwed it up last week. But everyone sees the Alabama games. So if you watch, if you're a college football playoff committee member, or you're a voter, or you're and you see Texas, and you watch that Alabama game, and you maybe saw the Texas-Oklahoma game, even though they were up, and you're like, wow, this Texas thing's pretty good. Probably didn't see the Texas Tech game. Probably missed that, oh, they're the last team to ever get scored on by Oklahoma State. You know, so this is going to be a really interesting test because 7 points, I think the public saw that Alabama game. It's like, oh, Texas is really good. But TCU, they've got guys. They've been playing great.
You taking 7?
I might have to go Texas still. Like, eventually it's going to happen.
You're laying it. Wow. Okay.
It's eventually TCU. You're right. Eventually it's going to happen with TCU here. So, this seems like as good a time as any.
What's your favorite bet this weekend?
You know, that was that's crazy up there. I'm sort of thinking Illinois, if they're playing, if they get back to their form, they beat Purdue by more than a touchdown. That was their style just didn't seem to fit. They played okay against Michigan State. Michigan State just had a good game. Purdue's having a whole lot of problems. I'm kind of liking Illinois to bounce back on this. I've gotten Notre Dame wrong every time this year. I'm now just going to jump in and say, you know what, Notre Dame, you're just going to be good already. Beat Navy by 17.
Let me close out with the Heisman thing. What, not the thing, the actual award that we can bet on. Is this really C.J. Stroud's to lose at this point? Like, really? What would you bet here? Stroud is plus 180. We'll give the DraftKings odds. Hendon Hooker's plus 280. Caleb Williams is 7-1. Blake Corum is plus 750. Bo Nix now 8-1. And randomly Drake May, right, from North Carolina. Luke's brother. 12-1. I mean, who would you bet on at this point? Who's got the best number?
Where you got old Stetson Bennett on there?
He's 16-1.
That's not. I would like a little more than that, but like George is going to keep rolling. If you looked, if again, side by side Pepsi Challenge taste test here. You put Stetson Bennett's numbers up against, you know, some of these other guys, and they're right there. Where's old Caleb Williams at, too? Because if you take – everyone's on the Bo Nix love train right now. If you take Caleb Williams' numbers and put him next to anybody else's, they're pretty amazing at this point. So, and he's got the big games coming up. Caleb Williams would be probably the best value.
I feel like it's wide open at this point. Excellent 80s reference with the Pepsi Challenge taste test. One of the most effective ad campaigns of our lifetime, by the way.
So I still quoted it, even though I hate Pepsi. So here we go.
Well, there you go. Pete Futak, everybody. Enjoy the rankings part deux tonight. Pete Futak from collegefootballnews.com. Check it out. Our own JBT, Jonathan Montoble on the NBA. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets. It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app, featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM MGM Rewards, sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager with BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions, that is. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Your pro tip of the hour. This should go without saying, but we'll say it. Yes, we will. If you're getting serious betting NBA and NHL, this applies to other sports as well. Make sure you're looking at overnight lines like NFL, college football. You can often find great value on the opening lines the night before. That's your pro tip for the hour. We do one every hour on VSiN across every show, so that means at least 20 every day. They're all available for VSiN Pro subscribers only at VSiN.com, where you can sort them by sport and by show. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from ALB_ATC, A. Brown. I almost prefer the guessing college football line segment where Kelly does zero research and just tosses numbers out there like grenades.
The sad part is...
Pull that pin and heave ho.
The sad part is that I probably have about 30 minutes of research on Monday nights that I put in for these.
That's one way to look at it. Jack Hanyon, if you remember, I told you last week I would take the field against Bob. Nice guy, but not a smart man. Why pay for 6 entries if you're not going to use it to your advantage? Jack, here's the thing about that. First of all, you taking the field against one guy is really not a bold bet.
Yeah.
But secondly, your point about why pay for 6 entries if you're not going to use it to your advantage? Well, he was going to use it to his advantage on Thanksgiving. That was his plan. So to say, to base that on the result is also disingenuous.
Yeah,
it's just that. I'm going to defend my man.
So much of this is just like poker. You know what I mean? It's just, you got the big stack. You want to lean on the smaller stacks at the table. That's what he's doing with 6 entries.
Roger Jones, that was excellence all the way around. Mr. DeLuca for appearing in his style. Gil, great interview with compassion. And Kelly with the heartfelt soliloquy. Well done. My voice was getting very clumped on that. Thank you, Roger. That was very nice of you. Ladies and gentlemen, he is our senior NBA analyst. He's also the host of Hardwood Handicappers, and I do believe he writes some NBA on the website as well on a daily basis, VSiN.com. It's Jonathan Von Tobel. How you doing, JVT?
I'm good. I also wrote up 2 conferences in the College Basketball Betting Guide. Make sure you get that out when that comes out, too, and just sign up for everything we do. How about that?
What were your 2 conferences? What did you do in college basketball?
Mountain West and the West Coast Conference. Those were the conferences that I was responsible for.
Oh, you did the West Coast Conference. Where'd you have Pepperdine?
I was going to say, did Gonzaga? I can tell you that.
No.
I think I had Pepperdine. We weren't supposed to rank them, but I will say this. They project to be, I think, a 8th, I think, at this point.
Ooh,
right now.
That's super young. Sleeping on Pepperdine.
I will say, they're a super young team. There's a lot of sophomores on that team that played a lot of minutes last year, and there's a lot of growth that should be there for that team. And if a lot of the young guys hit, because they got a lot of good shooters,
yeah.
That could be a team that surprises some people.
Those 3 sophomores were all freshmen West Coast Conference last year. They're excellent. Really, like, well beyond their years basketball players. We'll
see. What was that Rodney Dangerfield movie where he goes back to school, you know? Like, I want to go to Pepperdine.
Back to School.
Is that what it was called?
Oh, dude, we should all just go to Pepperdine.
I just want to go to Pepperdine, man. I went to basketball camp there once. I lived in the area when I was like 8 years old.
Did you?
It was amazing.
Really?
I'm more interested why Gil has like a thing. Did you go to Pepperdine, Gil? Like, what's the connection?
No, I'm really good friends with one of those 3 guys' fathers.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I was going to say, that seems like a specific connection.
Like,
yeah.
Why does Gil have such intricate Pepperdine knowledge? Isn't this supposed to be an NBA segment? That's right.
Oh, I'm down. I like it. I'm big on the waves. I'm cool.
Let me ask you, so we do this in some form every week, but usually we go top and bottom here in the early going, but I want to go sort of middle of the NBA here, John, and ask you about a few teams that are sub 500 currently, a little more than 10% into the season, specifically the Sixers, who are 5-6. I guess we'll throw the Nets in there at 4-7, but that sort of pollutes it. Let's just say Sixers, 5-6. Warriors at 4-7 after Steph drops 47 last night. They get to 4-7. And then your Timberwolves, if I may call them that, at 5-6. Which of those, and maybe it's multiple, are you most worried about?
Ooh, okay. So I think we'll start with Golden State, because I think I'm starting to get a little bit more worried about the Golden State Warriors. If you go back to last night, and here's the thing, the reason why, and I wrote about this in the NBA guide, which was you could make the argument coming into this year, the Warriors were better this year, right? Their starting lineup in the postseason that took a vast majority of their possessions, did not play a single possession on the floor last year in the regular season, so they're going to have those guys out there. Their bench which was supposed to be a strength littered with young guys, was supposed to really help them out. But look at yesterday, guys. The five starters for the Warriors, and this is just plus minus for one game, but it gives you an idea. Plus 19, plus 16, plus 8, plus 20, plus 10. The bench, minus 17, minus 7, minus 22, minus 11, and minus 1.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah, right. This bench has been terrible. It's just flat out terrible. Guys like Jonathan Kuminga, who we expected to be a big role player for this team, couldn't get on the floor for like four games until the other night. I think it was the New Orleans Pelicans games where they finally started to give him a little bit more minutes. I think you're kind of worried about Golden State in the sense, Gil, that like once we get to the end, because I would assume that they're still going to be there, right, because they still have Steph Curry and this starting five. But if this is going to persist, you know, the difference between them and teams at the top in the Western Conference, the Utah Jazz, dare we say, when you get to the postseason, like that's going to make a difference in terms of winning a championship. So I would say, yes, I'm really worried about Golden State if that doesn't change. And if I could add, too, like for a team like Philly, I think I'm going to give them a pass. Joel Embiid allegedly dealing with plantar fasciitis and a respiratory illness that really cut into his conditioning. Maybe that's just something that once they get healthy, because we know James Harden is going to come back, they'll start to look like the team that we expected. And as far as Minnesota is concerned, I would be concerned with them as well, because their defense has been really good, but their offense has been in the bottom half of the league for this entire season. And you're starting to get comments coming out of guys like Anthony Edwards about like the unhappiness of his role and how inefficient it has been for him with two big guys out there on the floor. That's kind of worrisome, I think, when you're talking about comments on top of statistical, we'll call them lows for this team in terms of their offense.
Yeah, I mean, because was there a little bit in your head, even though you may not have verbalized it, when, you know, the bullishness on the Timberwolves, where you're like, I wonder if this will work? Like, was there a little bit of that in your head?
I think offensively, yes, right? Yeah. Like, and I thought that they were going to be able to make it work, just given the fact that, you know, Anthony Edwards, like their defense was going to be so good that the offense would come along, and that's kind of what they're doing. The problem is, like, you're looking at their game log, they're not even having like those offensive outbursts, right? Like, that's kind of the problem. Like, every once in a while, if I were to see like a game, like you were like, oh, okay, here we go, that's kind of what you expected, then you feel a little bit better. But the offense has come along a lot slower than I thought. I thought that could be an issue, but I thought that they would be able to overcome it, and then hasn't really been the case for them so far.
I think the other thing, John, is the defense, you're right. I think you thought you could count on that a bit more with Gobert in, but we're seeing right now what is it like when Gobert's off the court, right? And these past couple of games have been pretty rough from a defensive standpoint as well. So that's, you know, any injuries or long-term things happen with Gobert, then you've got serious concerns for this team.
Four random, because we have no NBA games today. They did everything yesterday because it's election day today. Everybody go out and vote. The 15-minute stagger time between every game yesterday. Shouldn't we do this every night?
Yeah, kind of liked it, right? Like, it was kind of cool just being able to, like, okay, that game's ending, let's go to the next one, and let's keep doing it. Now, you know, we deemed all 30 teams in action at one point. That was a little stressful watching everything, but no, you're right. Like, I think the staggered times and having that, usually they stagger it by hour, but yeah, give it to me every, like, 20 minutes or so. I was totally down with that.
I loved that. It felt
that was
like,
great.
It made it have, like, a red zone feel to it almost, like you said, JVT, I kept turning on with, you know, every game that had like 4 minutes left, just flipped to that one and it was close. It was great watching the end of it. They should be doing that every night.
Did Scott?
And there was a lot of tight games yesterday too. That really helps.
Did Scott Hansen come on and say Duval County at any point? No, didn't happen.
They worked that one.
We talked about this a little last week. Banchero was minus 350. Johnny's minus 700. Shouldn't we be betting other rookies just on principle?
Yes, like he's been awesome. I totally get it, but like you got to look around. Like Benedict Mathurin really hasn't fallen off that much. Like guys like him, I agree with you. To say that he has this high of a probability of winning this award is absolutely nuts. And if I could throw out there one award that I think is very much worth keeping an eye on, I did add Tyrese Halliburton at 12-1 to win Most Improved Player of the Year. This kid's been freaking awesome. I think he had like 25-9 the other yesterday. Actually, might have had 12 assists. I think I'm misremembering that. But regardless, Tyrese Halliburton's been freaking great for the Indiana Pacers, and I would very much keep my eye on him because he's now as down as low as like 850. But I still think there's one shot that's got him at 12-1 to win that award. He's going to be up there, man. He's been incredible.
Good little one. Who's the rookie you would take a flyer on right now?
I mean, I think I would probably go with Mathurin or Jabari Smith Jr. I know Kelly and I discussed him about a week ago or so. I know he's down as low as 50-1. Smith's been awesome, and they're trusting him a lot on defense, and I really like it. I just wonder if a lot of people aren't going to watch rookies defensively and say, that's going to get him the award. But I think Smith and, of course, Jaden Ivey, who's had a really big role for this Pistons offense, is very much worth looking at those big numbers.
Not that far into the season, Jabari Smith Jr., 100-1 at DraftKings. Right now.
Real quick, over-under. Hanukkah, which is in December, Kyrie returns before or after? Not Christmas, again, Hanukkah.
Hot take. We never see Kyrie Irving play basketball again.
Never again for any team.
He's retiring. He's done.
That's an over. Over Hanukkah is the answer to that question. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
See you guys.
At me, JVT. Hardwood Handicap is the name of the podcast. We've done all we can do. Thank you for listening. Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.